want to, first of all, acknowledge the Indigenous people and again remind ourselves that it is Indigenous people around the world who are suffering right now from the impacts of climate change in many profound ways, and here in Australia it is no different. And so when we're talking about climate, we're talking about climate justice as well. And you'll see in what I'm going to say today that that's a very strong theme, to move from the science to the community. Now, I think this is the most important meeting happening in Australia today. And you might wonder why. Well, first of all, I don't get up at 4:30 in the morning to get to a meeting unless I think it's very important. But it's important because everybody here knows that climate change is real, urgent and accelerating. That is taken as read. We all know that, and the science we just heard from David just confirms that. But we are here, and this is the importance of the meeting, because we have to regroup, rethink, reorganise, re-energise this whole movement and redouble our efforts to get a campaign for a strong and genuine action on climate change in Australia this year and in the coming years. That's what we are doing here, not to debate anymore those issues that we hear in the media all the time, but rather to get ourselves organised. Now, we should not be surprised that the campaign has been pushed off centre stage. We ought not to be surprised. As I said to you last year, this is a classic case of Machiavelli, where you've got a situation where, as he said, nothing's more difficult to achieve than to bring about a change in the order of things, because those who have a vested interest in maintaining the old order fight like partisans, and those who believe in the new order are lukewarm because, and he says mankind, so I will in this context, because mankind doesn't believe in things until they actually happen. And that is what has happened. So in the last year, we have seen the old vested interests fight like partisans, and it has derailed, essentially, the movement for climate action. Now, it's not rocket science what they have done. We could have done it. The only difference is they have money, of course, but I'll just put that to one side. The sceptics are not spontaneous outbursts from independent people here and there, you know, just coming up with these ideas. It's a carefully orchestrated, it's a funded campaign, and it's by the oil and gas, the logging, all of the old order, cement, the whole range of them. All of those vested interests in the old order have put a great deal of money and effort into organising a global campaign fronted by a range of sceptics who supposedly spontaneously pop up when they are needed, and they poured everything into it in the lead up to Copenhagen, and they were successful to the extent that they destabilised the media coverage in the months leading up to it and confused the population. As to the IPCC and the criticisms, the same thing. This is not just spontaneous. It is using the self-correcting mechanisms of science against science. Essentially, that's the job of scientists, to find mistakes people have made, prove them, move on, change the science and so on. But of course, they've made that seem as if it is some kind of major fault. Now, the thing is, in Australia, those lobbyists for the oil and gas, the coal industry, all of them, the old energy orders, if you like, the old fossil fuel sectors, have been in Parliament House frequently. You look at the lobbyists, they are there weekly in all parliamentary offices wanting to talk to you about everything, and the echo chambers are there with them, with generators groups and the Business Council of Australia and the whole lot of them. But the climate movement hasn't been there. We need you, all of us, to have a much bigger presence in every Parliament House in the country, state and federal. And you have to pester to get those meetings and insist on having them, because we need an opposite, equal and opposite reaction. As I said to you last year, it needs the climate action groups on the ground to radicalise the mainstream movement, which got very conservative, with the exception, I'd say, of Greenpeace in particular on energy and TWIS on the forests, Apart from that, things were very, very conservative, and it is those large groups that have got the presence in Canberra, not the people on the ground. So it is critical that this group, we get organised so that the very strong climate action movement is in Parliament Houses everywhere, and the absence of them lends itself to Martin Ferguson, as some of you would have seen this week on Late Line, on there saying, well, the renewables really have to prove themselves. He didn't go on to say, unlike carbon capture and storage, which we have given billions to, which of course is completely and utterly unproven, not to mention his investment in coal to liquids. And he has just appointed, or we've just passed legislation to set up the board of the Centre for Renewable Energy in Australia, and the interim chair is the former BHP Billiton person who ran the Olympic Dam expansion. And when I asked, why is it that all these people on the interim board, not one of them has any experience in renewable energy? One of the others, by the way, had won the Prime Minister's Medal for Nuclear. I thought that was really good to have him on a renewable energy board. They said, oh, well, you know, these people have to have project management and finance management skills. I said, well, as it happens, there's not a single nuclear project in the world that has come in on budget or on time, so I can't, you know, see where that's a great thing. However, having said that the vested interest derailed things in Australia and got rugged firmly into the 5% reduction target and no further, and no reductions in Australia, all to be funded by buying permits from overseas, so wink, wink, nudge, nudge, business as usual, coal export, coal railways, everything business as usual, we're just buying the permits, that's all nice, everyone could agree to that. Having done that here, they also did it globally. The US was the critical player in Copenhagen, and those very same interests who are in our corridors here are in their corridors there, and they derailed any serious position for the US. And once the US had no serious position and didn't and refused to ratify Kyoto, the whole game was off globally. And I can go into that later, but essentially that's what happened. So that is not rocket science. It's very clear who destabilised what and how it happened. But when we get down to the messages, what we have to say is these people had money, they got organised, they fought very strongly and they organised themselves globally, and they organised around three or four simple messages. And this is why I say we need to get away from the science to a certain extent. They understand how people, why people behave as they do. You can give people information, but if it doesn't match their value system, they will not listen to it, or they will be trying to find reasons not to listen to it because they don't really want to hear that message. But they understand that. So they came out by saying, first of all, doubt the science. That's the first message. Everything was around doubting the science, and not only that, turning the science into something that is irrational, something that is a dogma like religion or a religious belief. And so the science became a dogmatic, irrational, green religion that had all these faults with it, and therefore you couldn't believe it. So that is a critical first thing they did. The second thing they did was organise all their messages around, you will be worse off. This will be a sacrifice. This is, as someone said to me in Tasmania once, if the Greens have their way, we will be back living in the caves, drinking nettle broth and whittling Huon pine condoms. That is the message. That is the message. The message went out there from one end of the planet to the other, through every echo chamber, from Andrew Bolton, the Business Council and everybody else, that if you act on climate change, you will be worse off. You will be miserable. The lights will go out. You will not eat very well. You will be poor. They'll be coming to take away your cars, your comfort. There'll be no more retail therapy. Your life is going to be bleak, cold, miserable if you act on climate. And there are, of course, those people who do it because they think it's the just and proper thing to do, and aren't they just self-righteous, and who do they think they are? But in reality, we all like being comfortable and happy and nice, and so that's why you shouldn't act on climate. And worse than that, if they have their way, your jobs, your careers, your purpose in life will be gone, because your purpose in life is to earn so that you can consume, so that you can then destroy the planet. So that's a good, that the last bit's not there, but your job is your life. Your self-definition is not about who you are or what you do. Your self-definition is about what you have. And these people wanting you to act on climate are coming to take it away. That has been the message. Now, if you analyse that, it is actually another culture wars. It is just like what we've been through in Australia with the whole race debate. It is a culture war, the history culture war. So if we're going to deal with that, we need a nationally organised campaign, and we need three or four clear messages, and we need a strategy on the ground to deliver it. Message one is that the science is what we have to believe in and not be defensive. I'm not going to go out there anymore. I'm really glad that David's presented us with the information about the emails and all the rest of it, and I've got it there and I will use it. But I'm actually not going to go on the defensive and spend half my time saying, oh, but the emails here and oh, but the IPCC there. It's time we just say it's the science that is rational. It is climate denialism that is a religion. It is a dogma. It is irrational. It is organised. It is funded by greed and self-interest. They are our messages about the science. Then we go on to acting on climate change means you will be better off. So we completely go on to that self-interest thing. Will you be worse off? No, you will actually be better off. Why? Because if the sceptics have their way, you'll be on the treadmill that is the grey world of lifestyle poverty, endless commuting, 12-hour days, social isolation. You'll be eating badly, unhealthy. You'll have dubious food, poor air quality in your cities, and you'll be trapped there in the dark ages, in the dark, polluted cities. But if you embrace climate change, you'll be entering the coloured world of the Enlightenment out of the dark ages, and you'll be having healthy communities, public transport, cycleways, community gardens, renewable energy, clean air and water, public open spaces, jobs that are brought to you with new technologies, redesigned cities, the whole renewable energy 100%, localised health and education, urban villages, you'll be human again, people care about you, etc., etc. And so we will turn into very much a campaign of Harry meets Sally, you know, I want what she's got or what she's having. So that is what we have to get in the community, that with climate action, it's like, I want to be with those people because that's actually where I want to be. That's what and it means also this question of a purposeful life. Not only do you get all those great things, but you feel good because you're leading a purposeful life, which, hey, is saving the planet. So that's my real message here, that the great thing about a campaign like that is every NGO, every group can do it in a different way according to what they do. If you're a community garden, you just sell that message. If you're a public transport group, you sell that message. If you're whatever public housing, it doesn't matter what NGO you're there. It means that the forest campaign, which is critical to this too, can run the same thing. This is green spaces. This is biodiversity. This is the future of the planet. This is about living well. So as a final statement, and I'm happy to take questions on all the politics, we will get to, but I'm not going to obviously now. But this is a three-year campaign at least. While the federal election is really important, we need to get organised and go for it in those inner city seats, as Damien has identified, and we have to have a physical presence lobbying outside those offices and so on. Remember, this is the UN Year of Biodiversity. Next year is the UN Year of the Forests, and the year after that is Rio plus 20. I think, and that is the year before the next federal election. So we've got two federal election strategies. This one and one 3 year hence, with major campaigns on biodiversity, forests, Rio plus 20, and this massive shift in speaking to people's belief systems and convincing them it's really about who you are and what you do. It is not about what you have. And I really think if we can get that kind of debate happening and get all the NGOs organised, it will be this spontaneous movement where this will be popping up all over the place and they will not be able to shut it down. It's about a bit like the internet for climate change.